I'm Montse Alvarado. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly,
a small delay for a big decision. The federal employee buyout put on pause. How long the extension might last. The U.S. Senate steps in front to take the lead on a spending plan amid disagreements in the House. We're on Capitol Hill. The future for women. We speak to a leader in the fight for women's sports following President Trump's executive order.
And following the call.
Hear the Holy Father's prayer intention for the month of February.
These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast day of St. Paul, Mickey, and Companions. I'm Montse Alvarado in for Tracy Sable. Our top story tonight. A federal judge blocks President Donald Trump's plan to push out government employees by offering them money. Millions of federal workers originally had until midnight to make a big decision, stay at their job or leave with a financial offer. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, how's the weather out there?
Monse, good evening. Great to see you. The weather, yeah, you know, I should probably be wearing a winter jacket, right? My mom would be mad, but, you know, I'm not worried about that. I'm a Wisconsin guy, born and raised, so this is fine with me. Anyway, we'll get to our story. Warm out here for sure, if you think about it, with all the flurry of activity coming out of this White House. The judge putting the brakes on President Trump's efforts to reduce the size of the federal government. That judge scheduling a hearing for this coming Monday. And, Monse, that deadline for now, be extended.
President Donald Trump's plan to downsize and reshape the federal workforce on pause by order of a federal judge. Administration officials now directed to extend the deadline to apply for the program until after next week's court hearing. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says more than 40,000 workers accepted the buyout, and she expects the number to grow.
We encourage federal workers in this city to accept the very generous offer. If they don't want to show up to the office, if they want to rip the American people off, then they're welcome to take this buyout, and we'll find highly competent individuals who want to fill these roles. Hi.
Opponents of the deal warn, don't take the offer.
They're making it sound like federal workers are going to be put on administrative leave and paid till the end of September. There's no guarantee of that. They're probably going to have to continue working.
As the new administration clamps down on costs, Catholic Relief Services on its website urging, let your members of Congress know that you are deeply concerned about the administration's recent decision to stop work on almost all U.S. foreign assistance programs.
Catholic Relief Services, which helps vulnerable people around the globe, is urging President Trump to continue funding their organization. Your response, please.
Secretary Rubio has been tasked with now being the acting administrator of USAID. As you all know, we have streamlined USAID into the State Department. Hey, Rachel. And so we want to ensure that we're being good stewards of the American taxpayers' dollars. He is currently going line by line to ensure that foreign aid to private organizations, public organizations, or government organizations, aligns with America's interests.
Earlier, Secretary of State Marco Rubio approved an emergency humanitarian waiver, adding, implementers of existing life-saving humanitarian assistance programs should continue or resume work if they have stopped, subject to the directions outlined in this waiver.
Now, earlier today, President Trump spoke at two national prayer breakfasts. He's restoring the White House Faith Office, led by Pastor Paula White, and he's vowing to protect religious liberty.
I'm announcing that I will be creating a brand new presidential commission on religious liberty. It's going to be a very big deal, which will work tirelessly to uphold this most fundamental right. Unfortunately, in recent years, we've seen this sacred liberty threatened like never before in American history.
And just one day after Trump's new attorney general was sworn in, he announced Pam Bondi would lead a new task force to eradicate anti-Christian bias at federal agencies and prosecute anti-Christian violence and vandalism. And President Trump also spoke today about his own faith life, saying he feels more strongly about his beliefs just months after almost nearly being assassinated. Monse, back to you.
Thanks so much, Owen. Well, joining us now to talk more about international religious freedom and religious freedom in general is Ambassador Sam Brownback, former ambassador at large for international religious freedom for the U.S. Thank you so much for joining us. First off, the president's idea for this task force to get rid of anti-Christian bias in federal agencies. Where have you seen this kind of bias in the government?
Unfortunately, you see it in a number of places. One of the things that he signed really even today on this women's sports issue, this has a lot of religious overtones to it. You're seeing bias in the military that's taken place. We've got, I was talking just today with the head of one of the military chaplains association, talking about all the anti-religious bias that they've seen taking place in the military. So really, you're seeing it in a number of places. I'm excited that the president has put these commissions together because this will give some places to get some air and information out there so that people can make their own decisions about it. But frankly, I've run into quite a few of these situations that I've seen where you have this bias against people of faith.
Now, I want to talk about your summit, but before that, the president also announced that he wants to create a commission on religious liberty. At the recent International Religious Liberty Summit, a topic of discussion was religious persecution. How is this new commission different from the existing IRF commission, International Religious Freedom Commission, that looks and serves as a watchdog for these violations around the world? Is it going to serve as a watchdog for violations within the United States?
That's my understanding of it, actually, that it will focus on the U.S. The International Religious Freedom Office just focuses overseas. There's one country in the world it doesn't study, and that's the United States. This commission, as I understand, is going to focus much more on the United States, not even exclusively. I haven't seen any details. I was there at the announcement that he was making the National Prayer Breakfast. But my understanding is going to focus on the bias and the difficulties taking place in the United States.
Now let's talk about your IRF summit. What did it mean to have Vice President J.D. Vance there?
It really elevated the issue. And the president today said, we're going to stand for religious freedom here and around the world. That really elevates the issue to the entire world and says this is a fundamental human right and the United States of America is going to stand for it. You're going to see a lot more freedom around the world as people get behind this movement that the president's putting forward, but also showcase all the problems we've had around the world and all the Christian persecution that you're seeing, which is at the highest levels in human history. These are really bold, big moves that you're going to see people's lives improve from.
Now, quickly, Ambassador Brownback, we've reported on the ongoing Catholic persecution in Nicaragua. Were there any comments or observations at the summit on this crisis?
I talked with a Nicaraguan pastor. He was an evangelical pastor, and they're just all getting run out of Nicaragua. He had a number of people in his organization that were either thrown in jail or kicked out of the country. This has got to stop. You're seeing it in Nicaragua. We're seeing it increasingly in Burma. We're seeing it in a number of countries around the world. And this is something that again, has to be elevated. But then we've got to get behind it and put sanctions on places and put some real teeth into this for there to be really any real reaction from Nicaragua or Burma or other places like that around the world.
Well, we look forward to your analysis once the administration starts taking action. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
Thank you, Monse.
Big news on Capitol Hill over plans to pass President Trump's agenda. Senate Republicans have decided to move ahead with their own plans to approve key components beginning next week. It comes as House Republicans continue to struggle to put forth a plan. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with more on that story. Eric.
Thank you so much, Monse. Good evening to you. It was just last week that House Speaker Mike Johnson and his leadership team, they were all smiles when they wrapped up their retreat. Now the speaker said that they had a framework in place, but since then, it's been unraveling. Members of the House Freedom Caucus have come out against it, saying that there are not enough spending cuts. Now, Senate Budget Committee Chair Lindsey Graham is putting together his own plan. I tried to ask the senator about it.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Senator Graham says that's the plan. So what do they have in mind? Prior to his meeting with President Trump, Speaker Johnson and House Republicans still want one big bill.
We're working on a one bill strategy.
So what are your goals? Where are you?
to move the ball forward, and I think we will. I think we're in a good place. This will be an important meeting.
Senate Republicans want multiple smaller issue-related bills passed, starting with Trump priorities, the border and energy, and later legislation that covers sweeping tax issues. Senator Ron Johnson says either way, major cuts must take place.
And you can look at, for example, the last balanced budget we had was Bill Clinton. If you grow that by the growth in population plus inflation, use today's Social Security, Medicare, and interest, that's a $5.5 trillion budget. That would basically balance the budget.
Some Democrats believe it's a mistake to use the reconciliation process.
What it means is that you're icing out the Democrats at all. So it's going to mean absolutely no bipartisan participation in this. So I think that's really bad. What you're also seeing in the House is a House divided within the Republican conference.
It does seem like there's a lot of chaos in Donald Trump's Washington, and that may be the goal. In terms of the internal processes of the Republicans, that's be stronger if we actually had a bipartisan bill.
Senator Richard Blumenthal says Senate Republicans need to take the lead.
Senate Republicans are introducing some sanity to this process. It's the only way we will get anything done is if Senate Republicans are able to take the ball and run with it, because the one beautiful package is a non-starter.
By the way, House Republicans are working with the White House. They're currently working on a meeting right now that's gone for more than 4 hours. When they come out, we'll hopefully be able to get some comment from them. Tomorrow, GOP senators and their spouses will be headed to Mar-a-Lago. They're going to be having dinner with President Trump. While they're there, Republicans will end up having a private meeting with the president in the hopes of coming out with a strategy to move forward. Monse?
Thanks so much, Eric. Days after meeting with President Trump at the White House, the Israeli prime minister shifts his focus to lawmakers. Today, Benjamin Netanyahu was on Capitol Hill, where he met with Senate Majority Leader John Thune and a bipartisan group of senators. He also met with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. It comes just 2 days after President Trump suggested that the U.S. take over Gaza. When asked today whether U.S. troops are needed in Gaza, Netanyahu replied, no. A U.S. service member and 3 others are dead after a plane crash in the Philippines. It went down in the Mindanao del Sur province in the southern part of the country. The plane was contracted by the U.S. military for reconnaissance and surveillance purposes. Residents say they heard an explosion and saw smoke coming from the plane before it went down. No one on the ground was injured. U.S. forces have been present in the region for decades to help train Filipino forces battling Muslim militants. The acting deputy attorney general is accusing FBI leadership of insubordination for failing to identify employees who worked on January 6th investigations. Emil Bove says the agents won't be fired unless they acted with corrupt or partisan intent. The bureau handed over details of the more than 5,000 agents and employees who worked on January 6th investigations. The actions have sparked lawsuits alleging the release of information could put employees in danger. Meanwhile, nearly 200 workers at the Environmental Protection Agency are expecting to be put on paid leave. Workers at the Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights received word they will be treated as a DEI division. The EPA has already shuttered its DEI office. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Under investigation, authorities may have pinpointed the cause of one of the California wildfires. And women only. One former collegiate swimmer explains why she lobbied for President Trump's latest executive order. Is pouring in following President Donald Trump's historic executive order banning biological men from women's sports. Today, the NCAA moved to keep competition in women's sports to just women. The change is effective immediately and applies to all athletes, regardless of previous eligibility. It does, however, still allow male athletes to practice with women's teams. The move comes after the president signed his executive order at the White House surrounded by female athletes. Joining us now is Paula Scanlon, Special Projects Ambassador for the Riley Gaines Center and former NCAA swimmer who attended the executive order signing at the White House. Paula, it's great to see you. I want to get your reaction to the NCAA changing its policy on women's competition so soon after the signing of the executive order.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, it's great to see them change their policy, but they could have done this a lot sooner. And I think ultimately what it came down to is they were afraid to do the right thing. And now they can hide under the argument that they're just following this executive order. And that is now their excuse to just do the right thing. And so I think that, again, I'm happy they're changing the policy, but it should have happened a long time ago. And waiting for the executive order to come in to finally do the right thing just shows how cowardly they really are.
Well, Paula, you have a lot of experience with this. Your personal journey has not been an easy one. Tell us, why did you decide to speak out in 2023 in front of Congress on your experience with a biological male on your swim team?
Absolutely. I mean, the reason I tried to speak out is because what we saw was happening across this country and in all age groups, in all sports, was wrong. And that's ultimately what it came down to, is that it is not fair for men to be using our bathrooms and our locker rooms. It is not fair for men to take our roster spots and our opportunities. And I could not stay quiet, and I saw female athletes getting injured. I mean, Peyton McNabb, high school volleyball player, 17 years old, was knocked unconscious by a male volleyball player, permanently injured. And I saw things like that, and I asked myself, do I want to be part of the problem or part of the solution? And if you stay quiet, you're part of the problem. So I knew I had to be part of the solution.
Well, we know President Trump declared the war on women's sports is over before signing this order. Do you think that's going to encourage more female athletes to do what you did and speak out on this issue?
Absolutely. It will definitely encourage more people to speak out on this issue. But we've already seen it even before the executive order. I mean, I've just seen in my past several years now of doing this, I've seen more and more athletes speak out. I've seen entire teams boycott competitions if they're competing against male athletes. And again, the community that we've been able to grow and support these female athletes that are going through this has been amazing. Riley Gaines, obviously, a great friend of mine. And we've been able to, again, help athletes that are going through this and help coach them through how to get through this, how to speak out, who to go to, and really even how to talk about it. And that's something I'm so grateful we've been able to work on and, again, really be there and build out that support system that we did not have back when we were going through this.
Well, Paula, knowing all of that, what is your message to female athletes out there right now who may see this issue on their team or in their school and are afraid to speak out?
My message to female athletes is know that we are supporting you, and if you need help and want to be supported, you can go to the RileyGainsCenter.org, where we can help support you. We can be there for you. And again, know that it is sometimes scary, but it is the right thing, and you will never regret speaking the truth and doing the right thing and speaking what you believe. And ultimately, it's not fair for men to compete in women's sports, and you don't have to be ashamed to say that.
Well, Paula, thank you for your courage. We're praying for you. So glad that you were here with us.
Thank you so much for giving us the time and the attention. I'm grateful for you guys as well.
Of course. Now, a California utility company says its equipment may have sparked a small wildfire in Los Angeles, which broke out the same day as the two massive fires in the area. Southern California Edison says the LA Fire Department is investigating the cause of the Hearst fire and believes the equipment triggered the blaze. Additionally, the company says it's reviewing a video that allegedly shows flashes of electric beaming from a tower near where the Eden fire began. SCE says it is cooperating with the investigation. Residents in West Virginia woke up to floodwaters taking over their neighborhoods. Take a look at this video where you can barely see the tires of the cars and roads remain completely flooded. The National Weather Service urged people to move to higher ground, calling the situation extremely dangerous and life-threatening. Meanwhile, more rain and snow is expected to hit the northeastern U.S. as another winter storm approaches the region. A Nicaraguan bishop accused of treason by his own country, sentenced to 26 years in prison, then forcibly exiled to the Vatican, is breaking his silence. His Excellency Rolando Alvarez is a victim of the nationwide crackdown on Catholicism by Daniel Ortega's regime. His imprisonment sparked global outcry, which ended with the Vatican negotiating his release. In an exclusive interview with EWTN's Paola Arriaza, he says, despite it all, he has ample reason to hope.
I do not feel exiled, but liberated and in the diaspora. And in the diaspora, faith always grows and hope is strengthened.
Please be sure to tune in to EWTN News In Depth for the full report. You won't want to miss it. It airs tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a leap of faith. Hear about the Holy Father's prayer intention for the month of February. Plus, a unique interfaith experience unites young people at the Vatican. Hear more about their experience. Francis urges the faithful to pray for young men and women to welcome God's call to the priesthood or religious life.
Pero un día entré en la parroquia y allí estaba Dios esperándome.
In the prayer intention of February, the Holy Father explained that God still calls young people even today, sometimes in ways we can't imagine. The task of Catholics, the Pope added, is to accompany their spiritual journey so that they will be willing and able to come to the call to a religious vocation. American, Israeli, and Palestinian youth gathered this week at the Vatican for a unique interfaith experience. The event was organized in response to the need for dialogue, mutual understanding, and awareness following the Hamas attacks on Israel in October 2023. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Siedegren has more.
October 7th, 2023, a day that changed everything. The terrorist attack on that day led to a full-blown war between Israel and Hamas. It unleashed more than a year of unthinkable violence in Gaza, Israel, and across the Middle East. But a meeting this week at the Vatican aimed to turn the page.
Now, we come here in the middle of a conflict, which is also a religious conflict between Islam and Judaism. And we come and we show, look, things can be changed. 500 years ago, no one could imagine that we will come to Rome through the Vatican, and this will be a place where Jews and Arabs can talk.
Young Jewish, Muslim, and Christian students came together for the Meaning Meets Us initiative. It was organized in collaboration with the Pontifical Foundation, Scholas Occurrentes, which promotes interreligious dialogue through educational programs. In addition, some were members of Middle Meets, a student dialogue initiative that emerged after the October 7th attacks.
We met a group of students and wanted to find a solution for the very polarized and extremist type of conversation that was very popular in universities all over the world back then about the conflict.
One of the professors accompanying the students explained that the initiative was designed to foster respectful dialogue among students without resorting to censorship.
As a professor in humanities, I felt that this is a very strange situation, that actually university became the place that people cannot talk anymore. And the idea was, this is not academia. In academia, we should have the ability to talk to each other about everything, to have a serious discussion about every topic.
The Vatican-based University of Meaning, the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and the University of Notre Dame also took part in the event, bringing together students from diverse cultures, faiths, and backgrounds.
We live in a very complex origin, and we have to deal with it. So I feel responsible that I have this voice that I can talk and express myself, and I want to share it.
There is an interreligious aspect deeply rooted in this war with Judaism and Islam, given the two countries that are involved.
A meeting with Pope Francis capped off the event. On Wednesday, 30 participants presented the Holy Father with a sweatshirt and a letter. The written message explained that they had addressed difficult issues in recent days and made it clear that they were not looking for consensus, but for the ability to understand one another. In Rome, Benedict Siedegrian, EWTN News Nightly.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.